Welcome to the 60-Day Rapid Launch Program, second module, the Connect Campaign. I'm Jim Armstrong, the coach and founder of Jim Armstrong Marketing Systems and the Inner Circle Club, and today we're going to discuss implementing the Connect Campaign. We're going to cover a lot of material quickly today, so if you could help me out, take notes, write down questions as you go, and save your questions till the end, we will be dedicating a good portion of the time to question and answer. So let's go ahead and dig right in. I want to start by talking about a secret lead list of hot prospects that are not accessible on any commercially available list anywhere. They're five times more likely to respond to your marketing than people on any other list. They won't treat you with suspicion, but instead tend to treat you as a trusted resource. They're far more likely to send you referrals. They're predisposed to do business with you versus all your competitors. They'll love to give you written testimonials, and they're extremely likely to do repeat business with you. And this list can make you rich. Best of all, you can get it for free. So what can this list possibly be? Well, it's your sphere of influence, especially your past clients. Now, you might be thinking, well, Jim, everyone knows that, you know, your past clients' sphere of influence, they make the best clients. They make the best, you know, they do give repeat and referral. But considering that most floor dealers totally ignore their past clients and the rest of their sphere of influence, I'm not convinced that everybody does actually realize this, or if they do know it, they don't do anything about it, so they wind up with the same results, clients who get neglected. One of the most expensive investments you're ever going to make is getting a client through cold advertising. So after spending the time, energy, and money to gain a new client, it makes no sense at all to totally ignore them. But that's what most people wind up doing. They slug it out in the marketplace, you know, with all the sleazy bait-and-switch dealers, big box stores, and everybody else to chase down a new client, all while totally ignoring the only people on the planet who have proven that they'll do business with you. So it's completely insane. They allow these 24-karat solid gold relationships to just rust away. So it's time to stop the madness, and we're going to show you how to do that. Now, a definition of the sphere of influence is people who know you, like you, and trust you, and of course that includes your past clients. Past clients are actually part of a larger group that are predisposed to do business with you, and again, that can be anybody that knows you, likes you, and trusts you. Purchasing flooring is a daunting task, and people are really looking for someone they can trust, and that's one reason your sphere is such a powerful resource. And it's not necessary that you have an intimate personal relationship with someone to include them in your sphere of influence. You know, the checkout guy at the grocery store, you know, that you know on a first-name basis and chat with occasionally, that person qualifies as a member of your sphere. And in just a second, we're going to look at a list of 50 sphere of influence categories. The most obvious and most powerful, of course, are your past clients. But sit down and brainstorm with your spouse or your office manager and so forth, and you should be able to come up with an additional 100 to 200 names above and beyond those in your past clients. Now, as of this recording, on page 37 in your Rapid Launch Manual is the 50 Sphere of Influence categories. And I'm not going to go and read all of them, but just a couple of them, high points. Obviously, at the top of the list is your past clients, past prospects, new prospects, prior coworkers, you know, if you were in another line of business recently, of course, friends, family, acquaintances. But then there's a whole list of other people that you do business with. Absolutely no reason to not include them in your sphere of influence and market to them. Now, I want to talk about how to multiply your sphere of influence by 100. If you've got 200 people on your list, and if you've been in business for any length of time, that's a very small list. But let's say that you have 200 past clients and people in your sphere. Well, each one of those people has a sphere of influence of at least 100 others, and so that's 20,000 people, and it's a virtual certainty that several dozen of those 20,000 people need flooring right now. Now, out of the 200, you know, there might only be a few that need flooring right now, but out of that 20,000, again, it's virtually certain that there are dozens that need your services. So by using your marketing to ask for referrals, you tap into a gigantic list of people who would have, you would have otherwise had zero access to. So the Connect campaign accomplishes three very important things. First, it reconnects you to your sphere of influence. Two, it builds value in the minds of, in their minds about your business. And three, it farms them for referrals from their sphere of influence, thus multiplying your sphere of influence by 100 or more. And when you read the letters in the Connect campaign, you'll see how that's worded. Let's talk about using message, market, and media. We've talked about this a little before, but message, market, media are the three elements in any marketing campaign. They're like the legs on a three-legged stool. If you're missing any one of them, the stool will collapse. Message is what you're saying, market is who you're saying it to, and media is how you're delivering the message. For the Connect campaign, the market is your sphere of influence. The message is what you're saying to your sphere of influence, the offer and the verbiage that reestablishes that relationship, and we'll get to that in just a minute. And then the media we're going to use is, for the Connect campaign, is direct mail. Direct mail is the obvious choice because any other media is, you know, newspaper, radio, flyers, that sort of thing. You know, you're not targeting, obviously you're not targeting your past sphere. It's more of a broad-based cold marketing kind of thing. I had a Ford dealer, I asked her what she was doing to connect with her past clients. And she said, well, Yellow Pages, newspaper, and radio. And that's really a cold marketing strategy. So anyway, let's talk for a minute about how to get your direct mail letters open. Americans sort their mail over a trash can. How many of you on the call, ask yourself, have done this? You're busy, you pull a big stack of mail out of your mailbox, and you stand next to the trash can, and you go, junk mail, junk mail, junk mail, and as you're doing that, you're throwing the pieces into the trash can, unopened, unlooked at, and then you come upon a bill that goes into the other pile, bill, personal letter from Aunt Sally, junk mail, junk mail, junk mail, into the trash. We've all done that. So don't have any illusions that just because you're sending out a piece that your direct mail isn't coming under the same sorting that everything else does as well. So your first job in direct mail is get your marketing, get your letters opened. And the reason is obvious. If your letter gets thrown in the trash unopened, you aren't even in the game. Nothing happens. Nada, zero, zip. The game is over before it's even started. Now I want to delve into a life or death direct mail drama. Jim Armstrong finds himself tied to a chair in a room with an eccentric homicidal maniac. The maniac holds a gun to Jim's head and utters the following statement. You have one chance to live. You must mail one letter and one letter only to a complete stranger. If the stranger opens the letter, you live. If he tosses the letter, you die. So how am I going to make sure that letter gets opened? Well, I have a couple of options. First option is the bulk mailer. And currently, this is on page 41 of the Rapid Launch Manual, if you want to turn to it. Let's just break it down and analyze the bulk mailer. Has my business name and logo and return address. Very sharp, very professional. I'm proud of my logo. But this is going out to a complete stranger. In this case, the business name and logo do nothing but broadcast junk mail into the recipient's mind. And you also see my meaningless slogan, number one in customer satisfaction. Doesn't convey any concrete benefit to the person that gets the letter. It's got a computer-generated label. Boy, they're fast and cheap and convenient, and I'll save a lot of money, but my life's on the line. So I'm not going to use a label if I've got to get that one letter opened. Bulk rate insignia. That's going to save me a lot of money if I use that instead of a first-class stamp. But then again, with my life on the line, I'm not as concerned about that. I want to get that letter opened, and bulk rate insignias absolutely scream junk mail. So if I use a bulk rate to send my letter, I'm probably going to die. So overall, this letter has the look and feel of an impersonal corporate junk mail. And if I send it out like this, odds are that I'm not going to live very long. And I've got a wife and two kids who are really counting on me not to get killed. So what's my other option? And that's option two, the stealth mailer. And currently that's on page 43. And let's break this down. The overall appearance is nothing like a letter you'd get from a business. It looks just like a letter that Floyd Pendergastman might get from his Aunt Sally or his cousin Herb. There's no business logo. There's nothing anywhere to indicate that it's from a business. In fact, the return address doesn't even mention a business name. Now, under current postal regulations, if the mailer is an ounce or less, you don't even have to return include a return address. And oftentimes I skip putting a return address if possible, unless I'm trying to clean my database list and I want to get a letter returned to me if the person has moved. So your first class stamp buys you return service. So I recommend that for the Connect campaign, you do use a return address because you're going to get a lot of these letters back. Statistically, about 15% of your database moves every year. So you want to clean that list. The address is handwritten with blue ink, no labels. Always use blue ink when you're writing hand addressing. And it looks like he's getting a letter from a real live flesh and blood human being. So my odds of survival are going way up. Also, using a live first class postage stamp because nobody sends a personal letter using bulk rate. Everyone uses live stamps. So when Floyd gets this piece of mail, he's going to see what appears to be a personal letter from somebody he knows, and the odds are extremely low that Floyd is going to throw the letter away without opening it. And you ask yourself, would you throw away a letter that looked like this? So put yourself in my shoes. You've got a gun held to your head. Which letter are you going to send out? The bulk mailer? Only if you have a death wish. Now, your physical life, obviously we've got a little tongue-in-cheek humor going on here, but your physical life's not on the line when you send out a marketing piece, but your business life is. The life of your marketing campaign is. So don't risk the life of your marketing campaigns by sending out bulk mailers. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a time and place for business names, logos, and even occasionally bulk rate. After reconnecting with your sphere of influence, it's okay to use business name, logo, and teaser copy on the envelopes. But for the Connect campaign, send out everything as a stealth mailer. Think Inc. is a mail house that specializes in stealth mailers, and you can find that in the $1 million resource directory. They can handle all of this for you. Contact them, and they make it very, very easy. Another way you can get those things hand-addressed, you'll hire someone locally, a stay-at-home parent, an employee who would like to earn extra money on the side, et cetera. Just the main thing is don't get bogged down trying to manage that. You've got better things to do. So let Think Inc. handle it for you if this becomes a time vampire. Let's talk about sequential mailings. Sequential mailings have been used for decades by bill collectors. And if you've ever had somebody trying to collect money or known somebody that's been had a bill collector trying to get money, they send you first a letter politely asking for money. They send a second letter that's marked second notice. It refers to the first letter with a more strongly worded message to give them money. And the third letter is marked third or final notice and refers to the previous letters and has even more strongly worded message saying to give them money now or dire consequences will result. So let's think about this. The bill collectors are trying to pry money out of the hands of people who don't have any money, who hate them, and will receive nothing in return once payment is made. But collection companies have been doing this successfully for years. So why can't a business owner use the same technique on people who don't hate them, who have money to spend, and will receive something they want in exchange for their money? So that's where the sequential mailings comes in, and I make great use of these, and you'll see that throughout the arsenal. Basically, a basic three-letter sequence campaign works like this. Send out the first letter featuring an offer with a deadline, 30. You want the deadline 30 to 45 days in the future, depending on how long you want the campaign. Now, campaigns that are tied to your monthly newsletter, like a monthly campaign of some kind, obviously make the deadline just 30 days. The Connect campaign is set up as a 45-day campaign. So you can change it to a 30 if you want. It's up to you. So I send out the first letter. 2 weeks later, send out the second letter. 2 weeks later, send out the third letter. Each has an escalating sense of urgency. And in between, you can also send out postcards or newsletters that tie into or make reference to the campaign. Another reason that the sequential mailings are powerful is because your prospects are leading busy, hectic lives. So even if somebody gets a letter that, and they see your offer and it's of interest to them, how many times have you done this? You've set something aside to, quote, get to it later. Well, that letter gets buried under all the other stuff and soon you forget about it. Well, imagine getting a letter 2 weeks later referring to the first one to remind you, go, oh, that's right, that, well, I do want to look into getting new floor covering. And then, again, a third letter 2 weeks after that. So that's another powerful benefit of the sequential mailings. Let's take a look at the Connect letters, and currently they're on page 48. The offer, let's talk about that first. The offer is every fourth room free, and this is for materials only, not labor. Basically, measure all the rooms the client wants done from largest to smallest, and then just remove the materials cost from every fourth room. So I took whole house measurements of 10 houses, and this averaged a 12.7% discount. I even figured it for every third room free. I've done that kind of a special as well, and that averaged a 24.75% discount. So if you're wanting to see what that would mean for your average clients, to, you know, pull the last 10 residential jobs that you did, and you'll get an idea of what your percentages will come to. Every fourth room free is a much more compelling offer than 12% off. It uses the word free, which is a more powerful offer than discount, okay, 12% discount. And it's for four rooms of the same kind of flooring. Mix and match becomes too complicated. If somebody calls about the offer but they want to mix the kinds of floors, then you could offer just a flat 12% or something, as long as the client has at least four rooms done. So just decide that ahead of time. Every fourth room free is unusual. It's compelling. It gets people to call or visit your store. And once they begin the purchasing process, you'll have a lot of opportunity to upsell the other items like area rugs, window coverings, what have you, or even additional areas. In the letters, it makes use of testimonials. If you don't have any testimonials now, you're going to want to call, 8, 10, or 12 of your past good clients that you know are just, hey, you have a good relationship with, explain what you're doing and say, hey, I would sure like your help with something. If we're trying to build our business and, you know, you had a good experience with our company when we put in your new laminate kitchen, a testimonial from you would just go a long way in helping others feel good about using our company. Would you mind giving us a testimonial? And 99% are going to say yes. They're flattered that you asked. I've gotten so many testimonials this way. And don't wait for them to send the testimonial to you. Do it right over the phone with them. And they're generally very happy to do it. In fact, they like it. People feel sometimes like, oh, it's another thing they've got to take care of, but you're going to just handle it for them right there. And in the manual, I give you some scripts and things you can use for that. Now, let's analyze the letters themselves. I'm going to spend just a little bit of time on this. We talked in the last module about principles of emotional direct response marketing. We broke down the elements in the sales letters. And you can see those elements here. If you look at letter number one, you've got a headline. You've got the subheads, which give you the double readership path, lists lots of benefits. Guarantees is unique selling proposition. It's got a call to action, an offer with a deadline, and it's got a PS at the end. Letter number two has all the same elements, but that one begins with the offer. It actually uses that as the headline. And then letter number three is the final notice. again, repeating basically the same messages in letters number one and two, but just an escalating sense of urgency there. The pink inserts are the referral request form, and I want to talk about those for a minute. Don't be surprised if you only get a few or even none of these back. The main reason to include this is to educate your clients on your referral reward program and begin planting those referral seeds. The most powerful use of the referral request form is going to be when the salesperson hands it to the client immediately during a follow-up visit after the installation. That's where you're going to get the biggest bang out of that strategy. But you may get a few back. I still recommend putting it in there. It lets them know about your program. For any referrals that you do get back, you've got the letter to the referrals, and that comes right after the pink insert in the manual. It's got you want to include a gift certificate, which has a tiered offer. And the way I've structured it is $100 off for a purchase over $2,500. $1,500 to $2,500 gets them dinner for two, and under $1,500 a gift for Starbucks. And you can make adjustments to fit your particular business. It's definitely that area something you can use as a template. And again, it restates all the benefits and warranties and guarantees, and it has a call to action and a deadline. Now, I want you to have realistic expectations when you begin your Connect campaign. Mass mailings by large companies to cold lists that generate a 0.1% to 0.5% response rate are considered successful, depending on what's being sold. So that can mean 10,000 mailers that go out and as few as 10 calls. So if you send out 200 letters, don't expect your phone to instantly be ringing off the hook with a flood of new clients. Don't forget that collectively, the 200 people on your list know thousands of people that they can refer to you, and that referral process can take a little time to get established. So remember the goal. You're going to kickstart a relationship that you may have neglected for a long, long time. Dan Kennedy says that for every month that goes by your clients don't hear from you, you lose 10% of the value of that relationship. So that's why we don't just start sending the past clients our newsletter or other things. We really hit them hard, so to speak, with a Connect campaign to kickstart that relationship and reestablish, again, something that may have been neglected for a while. It's critical that you see this strategy as a farm. You're going to farm this list over many years, and right now you're planting the seeds. It's really impossible to predict from exactly where in your farm the business will originate, but by initiating the farm, you're going to find yourself getting business from places that never would have even occurred to you, and this is because you're tapping into such a broad sphere of influence that is much larger than your own personal sphere. Now, I want to talk for just a second about complaints. I know that I've had my coaching clients and different business owners who I've presented this kind of a strategy to wonder if people are going to get bothered by getting so much stuff. And I can tell you this. I did a Reconnect campaign for 1,200 clients going from one business category to another. I sent a Reconnect campaign to announce the new switch. And out of the 1,200, I got about 15 to 20 that politely asked to be removed from the mailing list, and maybe one or two that were a little snippy about it. So overall, that was, you know, less than, around 1% or so of the total list. So it was very small. I did another Connect campaign for 400 people from a list that had been totally neglected for years. It wasn't my list, it was somebody else's. And we got maybe six that wanted to be removed. I did another Connect campaign for a list that was even smaller, 110 people, and nobody asked to be removed. So response is generally very, very positive. So don't let the fact that you might get a call or two from somebody complaining a little bit stop you from doing it. Okay, let's move on to the ambassador strategy. This is something that I developed from scratch and have made tens of thousands of dollars with it. And I have never seen any business anywhere employ this kind of a strategy, including floor dealers. basically the ambassador strategy works just like the Connect campaign, except for one important twist. The market is not your sphere of influence, it's your staff's sphere of influence. Each staff member, salesperson, and installer then becomes an ambassador between you and their sphere of influence. So the letters feature a photo of the staff person, and it's worded so that it's coming from them, not from you. And in one business, we made it a condition of hire that new employees had to bring us a list of 100 names in their sphere of influence. And we hired a young lady who brought us 110 names, and we implemented the ambassador strategy and just made thousands of dollars with it. And we also built in a commission for her, so she would get, you know, rewarded for bringing that to us, you know, above and beyond her regular pay. So that's something definitely that if you choose to, you can implement in your store. So consider making it a requirement that every staff member, salesperson, installer, and new hire brings you a list of 100 names and addresses. And the people on this list will all receive the ambassador campaign letters and then get plugged into your monthly newsletter and other sphere of influence campaigns. You and your business are going to be perceived as an oasis of joy and fun and sanity amidst this desert of business madness and bad service. You're going to create raving fans who are just going to spread the word about your store. This is powerful, so have fun with it, folks. You and your clients could use some fun, and I think you're going to have a good time with this. Now what I want to do is shift gears for a minute and have Bruce give us his thoughts on realizing what business you're truly in. And Bruce, you and I have talked about this a lot. The majority of dealers think that the business is managing a flooring store or doing sales or managing installations. And as a result, the dealers wind up building a business that is owner dependent. What are your thoughts on this, and how this affected your life and your business when you first opened your store?
Well, when I first opened my store back in 1977, I basically was the only employee at that time. And just shortly, I had a few employees and a few subcontractors. But in the beginning, I had to start by basically doing everything. And looking back, as we began to become more successful and began to add employees, I continued to micromanage. And I had to have my hands in everything, every aspect of the store. I was looking over everybody's shoulder, and looking back, I probably didn't trust the employees to do a job as well as I thought that I could do the job. And so in my own case, that really led to what we call owner dependency, where every aspect of that store and its successful operation depend on the owner. And what that did in my life is I began to really lose the priority of what my life was really about. And in doing that, it just kind of continued that cycle, and it led to employees that were frustrated, they were not fulfilled. You know, and I just basically was ended up, full time putting out fires, changing diapers, and that type of thing. And I got to a point where the business really owned me. I didn't own the business at all. And there was very little time off. 10 to 12 hour days were commonplace. Many weekends, just worked right through the weekends, very little vacation time. And that was very difficult because it affected my life negatively. The things I wanted to do with my family, I wasn't able to do. And throughout the years, then I began to really realize that my job was not to micromanage. It was really not to be a manager, but to be a leader. And my job was to help everyone else in the business become better at what they do. So I began to step in as a leader. I began to provide training and equipping and empowering people to do what they were good at, to do what I hired them to do. So it was a long process, probably about an 8 to 9 year process, where I finally got to the point that I learned I was not there to micromanage everybody else's job, but to lead a store and to market our products and to sell floor covering and sell good service to people.
Well, you said something there that stands out, and that's being, you know, leadership and providing the training and the tools, you know, to help them be the best in their area. And what we want to do, Bruce, we've talked about that a lot, is shorten that learning curve, because, I mean, what if we could have cut that to 6 to 12 months for you, to where you could have created those systems and so forth? I mean, what kind of impact would that have had?
Well, it would have not only changed, the face of our business, you know, it would have changed my life. It would have changed our employees' lives, our subcontractors. And again, I begin to lead, I begin to see a change in people. And people were happy to be at work. We begin to have fun at what we were doing. And we begin to become successful. We begin to dream about places that we can go and things that we could do together. And if I had the tools and the training to be able to do that in the first 6 to 12 months of my business, it would have revolutionized my life and the business and those that we serve and our customer base as well.
Keep in mind that what is your other option? Okay?
Well,
run a newspaper ad, run a Yellow Page ad, do the, you know, kind of the, do what you've already been doing. Obviously, you're looking for some other way to tap into a market that is unique in your marketplace. So that's the first part, I would say. The second thing is, it is very possible to set this up so that it becomes incredibly easy. I can do a campaign literally on Monday, decide I want to send out a letter to my sphere of influence, and by Wednesday having it hit the mail. If the piece is already written, I'll spend 10 minutes on it. And the way I do it is because the software program I happen to use is ACT. It does do mail merge, so I have the letter set up ahead of time so that I've got, you know, the mail merge names in there, and it's just very easy for me to hit, you know, just to merge that, send it to the printer, and get it out. So the setup is probably your biggest thing.
You know, I agree with you, Jim. It's kind of funny. Decker's been my friend. I came in here to help him as a consultant set up a network of businesses, and in reality, what has transgressed is I didn't push hard enough, and the business overwhelmed me.
Okay.
It's always a matter of, like, something going wrong that takes your attention from doing this. So I guess it is a matter of setting aside time outside the business to just actually start new processes.
You may find that you have to do that. I mean, if you're in the position where everybody is working 50 hours a week and running all day long, well, yes, you may have to temporarily bite the bullet and take a little extra time to get these things. You got to start somewhere. I think you're right. Now, the other thing I would mention too, the ambassador campaign is probably the most labor intensive. There's no reason you have to start the ambassador campaign right now. The most important thing is the connect campaign, and there's a way to do that very, very easily. It's not critical that you do a mail merge. You could go in and just put dear friend and client, comma, and then start the letter. Send it to the printer. If you got 1,200 people in your database, have them make 1,200 copies, okay, and send it out. You're going to do very well with that. Mail merge is kind of the Cadillac. Any time you can make something more personal, Todd, the more effective.
Say
that again.
I said, I totally agree with you. It's good points that, you know, rather than being the perfectionist, just get something going.
Absolutely. You don't let the good, let me think how this goes. Don't let the good get sabotaged by the perfect.
Yes.
All right? Get something out there. And ThinkInk really does make this easy. They can even handle the printing for you. I mean, you can literally make it so that you email them the completed piece, they and like an Excel spreadsheet of your database, and if you can't get it into Excel, print it out on labels and FedEx it to them. They can copy it from there. They can really make it easy for you. Talk to them about it. But literally, you email it to them, and a week later, you get a box with all the completed envelopes stuffed, addressed, ready for you to drop all three sequences. It can be that easy.
I agree.
Okay? And you'll notice that the newsletters are not mail merged. You got your copy of the Home Advisor?
Yes.
Okay, so you'll see that's just goes out to all your clients. If you can print address labels, by gosh, you can send that out. Then, once you've got more revenue coming in, several weeks down the road, we're of course going to start on the world-class installation system, which is going to really help you maximize the efficiency with the staff that you already have. But time goes by, you're becoming more efficient, you're getting more revenue, you hire that person who functions as your project coordinator / marketing coordinator, then do the ambassador campaign if you choose.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
I do.
But that doesn't mean that the ambassador campaign isn't good. It isn't that it's not powerful. It's great. But you got to take this a piece at a time. We all got to walk our own walk and run our own race, and let's just get something in the mail and get this thing going.
Gotcha.
Okay. Any other questions?
Jim, hi, Steve D'Angelo, Main Place.
Hey, Steve.
Hi there. I want to do some things immediately on kind of rewarding people on referrals, even before I get, kind of organized with a formal direct mail program on it. And, it seems like all customers are a little different. And I was wondering if maybe you could rattle off kind of the list of all your ideas on, referral reward kinds of things.
Oh, very good question. Now, I'm going to preface this by saying something that is important when thinking of in managing this. Begin with the end in mind. Customized referral rewards for each individual client is super powerful, very powerful. In fact, you can do is each client during the design audit, you can attach a form that asks them personal things like, what's your favorite candy bar? What's your favorite restaurant? What are your hobbies? I mean, really, I've done that kind of thing before. So you kind of find out ahead of time what they like to do. You keep that in their personal file, and then when it comes time to reward them, you send them exactly what they like. Incredibly powerful. The challenge should be obvious, especially from what Todd just said, is managing that sort of a thing. So what I try and do, if you don't have the time to manage a customized gift program like that, is find things that have broad appeal. Starbucks, the movies, movie passes, restaurants, movie rentals, gift certificates. And I buy them high enough so, the gift certificate high enough so that they can get popcorn and candy. And, you call it a night in, and it's on me. Does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, it's good. Brilliant to just ask them about their favorite restaurant. Nobody's ever offended by that. So
no.
Question anybody would answer, and you can always buy something at that. That's good.
And not only that, you can, none of this is set in stone. You can try it for a while, and maybe to kick it off, you're doing all these customized things. It becomes, you hire somebody then who can manage it for you, and you've got this referral reward program that's just blows people's minds. But again, don't let the good become the victim of the perfect. for everyone else, Steve, if you're going to take that, go down that road, more power to you, man. I think it's fabulous. But again, if you're going to use Movie Box or restaurant or Starbucks cards, how many of you on this call have ever even gotten something like that from a business? Once or twice?
Yeah,
nobody does it. It's so head and shoulders above what any business, including your competitors, do, that that alone is going to blow them away.
How would you feel about some sort of, you know, cash value kind of thing with realtors or other types of businesses, contractors, service master, carpet cleaners, things like that?
Yeah, that's another really good question. Realtors, you can't give them anything; it's illegal. I have a lot of involvement in the real estate and mortgage lending industry, and the federal regulations do not allow them to accept gifts for referrals in a real estate transaction. So, for instance, let's say that, you know, Realtor Tom sends you a client because buying a house to get the carpeting done, and you send that realtor anything of value, legally they're not supposed to accept that. So the best thing you can do is and they're all aware of it, and any of them that expect it from you are basically behaving unethically. Unfortunately, fortunately, I'm not going to go into it right now, but the real estate industry has enough problems without stuff like that. You know, the lenders, you know, you can imagine a real estate agent steering their clients to a lender who's maybe ripping people off but giving that realtor a big kickback.
Yeah.
So there's a lot. So, but anyway, handwritten thank you cards, you know, not a form letter. You write that realtor a handwritten, you know, thank you. And, you know, there's nothing, you know, that says you can't foster that relationship by going out to lunch and things like that. Now, as far as the contractors and that sort of thing, absolutely. I've done things where businesses who have sent us, you know, for every five clients you send us, we'd send in pizza or Chinese food for lunch for their whole staff. When I owned a carpet cleaning company, I used to do that for the floor dealers that referred us, and we'd send it to the whole staff because that would get the whole staff referring us because they wanted that pizza party.
Yeah.
So definitely.
So could I just get you to restate something? You're saying that for a realtor, I cannot send them a gift certificate for $50 for dinner somewhere.
They're not supposed to accept it. You can send it. You're not in violation of the law. They are for accepting it.
Okay, fair enough.
I actually, you know what? Before I was involved, I'll tell you a quick story. Before I was involved in real estate, I had, I used to send, you know, I really don't recommend sending money as a referral reward. I did that for a little while. I would actually give a percentage of it. I don't think that has the impact, and I think it gets too expensive and it's not necessary. But for a little while I did that, and I was sending this realtor who sent us a lot of jobs, I'd send her these checks and she'd mail them back to us and say, just pass it along to the client. And I couldn't figure out, well, out of all the people that we referred, she was the only realtor we had, and she wouldn't accept it. And later on, it was when I found out she legally and ethically was barred from doing so.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. And they understand that, by the way. They understand that. So if you have a good relationship with a realtor, by all means, foster that relationship, go to lunch and things like that. But you just can't send them things that have value. Any other questions? We got a good 10 minutes or so fire away. Are we done? Okay, folks. Well, excellent call. Let's get those again. I think Todd had a really good point. Don't be bogged down by the minutia. Get something out. Get it in the mail. Make it happen now. And I think that, that's the best way to go, especially when you're strapped for time. So, folks, tomorrow is the Module 3, Building and Maintaining a Herd with Tracy Tolleson. The call starts at 2 o'clock Pacific time. It's going to be a great call. You folks are going to really enjoy hearing from Tracy. He's just a brilliant marketer and a really personal fellow and a good friend of mine, and we're going to have plenty of time again for you'll be able to ask him a lot of questions as well and me as well. So tomorrow, 2 o'clock Pacific time, folks, thanks for being on the call, and we will talk to you then. Bye now.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Goodness.